Welcome, ladies and gents. I'm Lana, your hostess for the next hour. The show will focus on pro-white, alt-right Christianity. How did the mainstream church become so anti-white? While I myself appreciate pre-Christian tradition and spirituality, I know many of our listeners are Christians, but many are also opposed to Christianity for its all-inclusiveness. There's no way around it. The alt-right is diverse when it comes to spirituality, but there are big things we do have in common when it comes to the future of Europeans. My guests are Adam and Mary Gray from the show Good Morning, White America, which explores the idea of being pro-white and Christian. Mary is also the author of a children's book called Walls and Fences. The book gives an easy explanation of national borders, self-defense, and property rights for young kids. I ask Adam and Mary about some of the common cucky responses used by modern-day Christians, such as this big one. We're all God's children and home is in heaven, so open borders and multiculturalism is good. They also offer their view on the concept of turning the other cheek, the relationship between Jews and Christianity, and Jesus as a Jew. But I also ask about the effects of Christianity as a global faith, and also how they relate to our pre-Christian ancestors. I think this conversation is a happy middle between paganism and pro-white Christianity. Adam and Mary Gray, up next. Adam and Mary Gray, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
It's awesome to be here. Thank you.
So it's Adam like Adam and Eve and Mary like Mary and Joseph, right?
That's right.
Well, I have to say, my dad, I can top you there, because my dad's parents were Mary and Joseph, and he was born on Christmas.
Wow.
But no, my dad is not Jewish. He's not Jewish. So. So Adam, you said that you had to go through a wide-ranging search of, you know, religious and philosophical and political systems in order to find where you are now. So tell us about this journey.
Sure. And yeah. So I grew up in a nominally Christian household, went to church now and then, but didn't have, really, it was just like something you did. And it wasn't even like every week or something. I basically knew nothing except, but by the time I was about 13, I basically knew nothing about God, except that there was, like, I heard there was one, there's this place you go, there's this cross in the sky who died for me, and you take communion. And that was literally about it. Until about right around 13, God became very, very real to me. And so at that point, that's when I started to pick up the Bible and try to figure it out. I had nobody to show me anything. And it was like, I compare the next like 5 or 6 years of my life to like God randomly like dropping parachutes with little truths or little red pills. We'll call it that.
Nice.
Like a little red pill, maybe once every couple of years. So that got me from being like a real relativist and pluralist, thinking that all paths led to God. And you can be, I was pro-choice. I was pro-abortion, you know? I grew up in a Democrat household, hardcore. Not totally SJW, but not far off, to be honest with you. I was very much on that trajectory. But by the middle of college, I had gotten sorted out to the point where I was like, oh, no, the Bible is inerrant. I can trust it. It is my authority. And so I learned kind of like the standard evangelical core doctrines. Jesus is the only way. You know, read the Bible, pray, spread the gospel, those sorts of things. Be pure, morally pure, those sorts of things. And that really helped me out a lot. Then I ran into my missus here a couple years after that. And then we kind of together morphed into being more explicitly Protestant, Reformed Christians. And then after that, we got red-pilled on race and on the JQ. And I can talk a little bit more about that. But in that, in those years where, like I said, like I was still like really kind of lost, I went down a lot of wrong paths, thankfully not too destructive. But I definitely dabbled in religiously and philosophically in things that are invading Europe and America right now, put it that way. Things that are undermining our civilization. So I definitely looked into Judaism, Islam, secularism, hedonism, communism, looked into all those things and like kind of like stuck my toe in those waters. But again, thankfully, like I could never turn away from the cross. Once I got that on an emotional and intellectual level, I was literally like, I could not turn away if I wanted to. And it's been that way ever since. So for me, God is somebody that, and the Word of God, the Bible, is something where I can run as hard as I can in the opposite direction, but I have to admit that that's true and I got to come back no matter what. So here we are.
Has a hold on you. And it's true when you, as a couple, when you're on the same page spiritually, that's very important. And then you wake up to these things politically, it really binds you as a couple. It makes you very strong. I say that when you both understand that there's an existential threat, you know, you really work hard together. Now, Mary, what about your background? Were you always Christian and more kind of on the alt-right side of things, or what was it like for you?
Okay, so I grew up in church, definitely. And I went to a non-denominational inner city church. And so it had a lot of minorities and a lot of mixed couples and was really, I was like a hardcore cuck. I was definitely a good little girl, you know, and I would correct my parents if I thought they were saying something racist.
Oh, no.
So I was just really trying to do what I thought was right, you know, and Christian and everything. And then Adam and I got married, and about 3 years into our marriage, he started to look at these websites that kind of got me concerned because they were alt-right-ish. Yeah.
Cesspool.
Exactly. And so yeah. I'm like, oh no, what is happening to my husband? And like, you know, I was like, ah, I'm terrified, you know? But the more I tried very hard to stay open. I was scared, but I really wanted to have an open relationship with him. And, we both had established that, you know, if it's true, we're going to follow after it, no matter what, no matter the sacrifices that would have to be made. And, so I was open, and I think my turning point came when I asked him, okay, well, you know, what would you do with all of the people that are non-white but are Christian, you know? And he said, well, they can have their own society. They can have their own place to live just over there, like their own place to live.
Yeah.
There's no reason why we can't have our own place. Mm-hmm. And after I heard that, I was like, oh, okay. So you're not like one of those evil racists that, you know, kill everyone, because really what we want is just a place for ourselves. We want a place to raise our children and have them be proud to be white. You know, there's no shame in that. And so that was definitely my turning point. And then I started to be more open to it. And we read a lot of Cambria Will Not Yield.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this great story in one of his posts. And it talks about water buffaloes, right, dear?
Mm-hmm.
It was water buffaloes and just how the other water buffaloes totally wussed out and was going to let one of the younger ones be eaten by an alligator. I know it's like random, but going to be eaten by an alligator. And one water buffalo stood up and saved him.
Yeah.
And all the other water buffaloes are like, no, you need to love the alligators. They're, you know, creatures too. Mm. And yada, yada, yada. And so anyway, just the whole idea of this is for protecting your children. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, it's, I mean, what's more important than taking care of your kids? How can you cuck out on this? You know?
And a lot of liberals and cucks are in denial. They think it'll be fine for your kids. It'll just be like it is today. If they're a minority, nothing's going to change. This is what they think, right? But it is, everything is changing already.
Absolutely. I mean, just look down the road, just a couple of years, and just, I mean, even look back a couple of years, see how much has changed and consider what's going to happen in the next couple of years. I mean, it's just crazy that people can't see this, that they're so blind to believing this race lie that we're all the same and that everything's going to be tra-la-la, all fine. So anyway, so yeah, definitely to that.
I grew up very Christian, and pretty much every relative I have today is still Christian. Luckily, my aunts and uncles, they're really easy to talk to about a lot of pro-white, alt-right topics. But their children, I noticed, my younger cousins are not. You just can't talk to them about some of these things. And when I grew up in church, they weren't anti-white. And they actually, in the churches that I knew, they viewed Jews as amoral people. They didn't want to associate with them. So when did church become anti-white in your view?
Well, my suspicion, well, okay, so go back at least 100 years, if not more than that. I mean, you can see the infiltration of liberalism into the denominations and seminaries long ago. I mean, that's honestly what led to the American, quote, Civil War. I mean, if it wasn't for the fact that the descendants of the Puritans in New England became apostates, and that they turned away from the actual faith and embraced really what is now what we just call being a progressive. That's exactly what they were doing. That's what led to abolitionism. That's what led to lots of social movements that rose up in New England, and that has devastated the United States ever since. So really, you can easily say the church has started cucking out, easily 200 years ago. But it was more of a regional thing or limited to certain denominations. In the South, for example, that was not the case. During the war, after the Civil War, and after the Civil War, those churches were still both theologically and socially and culturally conservative, much more so than their northern counterparts. But my belief is that white guilt changed all of that. And so once those churches started going apostate, both socially and culturally speaking, and then also morally and theologically speaking, certainly by the 50s and 60s, and it just accelerated in the 70s and beyond. So now we're at the point where the most, quote, conservative Protestant denominations like the Southern Baptists, the Presbyterian Church in America, the direct descendants of those Confederates, okay, who fought for, you know, limited government, who fought for white identity and those sorts of things, they are the ones who are sometimes the most eager to push these blue-haired cat lady schemes. And so I trace it back, like I said, depending on what region you're talking about, at least decades, if not a couple hundred years. But it stems from a denial of some of the fundamental truths of the Bible. And for us, you know, race is not the chief thing of the Bible, but it is there, just like other natural laws are there in the Bible, just like gender identity is very clearly articulated in the Bible. And so these are truths which are not the main truths for us, but they are still truths, and they're still God's truths. And so therefore we need to take them seriously. Martin Luther, the German reformer, had a great quote which pointed out that if you're saying you're going to contend for the faith, if you're going to fight, you know, be like a holy warrior, if you're not fighting where the battle is actually raging, but instead you're off in some other place, you know, guarding a point where nobody's fighting, you're not really fighting. And so for us, obviously the battle is raging here on this racial and gender and sexual front. The battles about Christology and Trinitarian doctrine are over by for the most part. So here's where the fight is. And it's a terrible shame, and it's truly sinful and shameful to see people who should know better, people who claim to be pastors and bishops and so on and so forth, helping the enemy.
Oh, yeah. And one of the things we hear a lot of Christian cucks always say is the idea that we're all God's children, and home is in heaven. So bring on the open borders, right?
Wow. Yes.
That's very Jim Jones-like, to be honest with you. to say that this life or your physical body or physical safety or your biological relations have no meaning. Honestly, it's kind of funny. I was just mentioning some of these chief basic Christian doctrines like the incarnation, like the Trinity. To say those things that the cucks say is really to deny the truth of the incarnation of Christ, because they make Christ out to be just some spirit, and that Christianity is just a bunch of ideas. But that's not it. That's other religions. That's Gnosticism. That's forms of, you know, other philosophies. But Christianity specifically says there is a God, and he became a human being, and, you know, flesh and blood. And even after the resurrection, and this God died and rose from the grave, and he ate broiled fish with his disciples after he rose from the grave. So like the idea that the body and that this life doesn't matter is totally stupid. It is totally anti-biblical. If you deny the truth of the physical resurrection of Christ, or that we will be physically resurrected and judged, you would be cast out of every denomination as a heretic. But since they don't phrase it in that way, they're still running those denominations. And my prayer is that that will change someday pretty soon.
You made a good point earlier too, though, that, you know, just because everyone is Christians, because there's blacks and Asians are Christians and whites that are Christians, we don't all have to live together, right? So that's a good point that a lot of Christians don't bring up. They could just be Christian over there, right?
Exactly. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that's how we have functioned in all throughout history, unless there's a problem, mm-hmm. like the Crusades, which is going on right now in Europe.
So. Just in reverse.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's right. Now, the Catholic Church came as a universal faith, kind of a globalist religion, and anyone who accepts Jesus is welcome. Did Protestants think in the same way, or were they more exclusive?
Well, I would say both for Catholics and for Protestants, you've got this ability to be both national, and the Orthodox do this as well, obviously. Like, look at the Orthodox churches. They'll still call themselves, you know, the Greek Orthodox or the Russian Orthodox, whatever. But the various branches of Christianity, you can embrace this sense of, yes, we are part of one spiritual body, one spiritual communion, and yet at the same time retain our national distinctive identities. And so, like I said, it was liberalism, otherwise known as Marxism, progressivism, that has undermined that across the board, both certainly in the Protestant and Catholic, and also, I would say, Orthodox camps. So that now, honestly, like, even in the Orthodox camps, even though they still talk about themselves in national terms, if you are a white nationalist in those churches, you're going to be cast out. So it really doesn't matter which branch you're in at the moment.
Yeah, I think most churches have become anti-white. I think you guys do a home group. So when people ask, what church should I go to, what do you say to them?
We say that's why we're having these small group Bible studies.
That's right.
because it's kind of like, if we look at another sphere of life, it's kind of easy to see. So look at where you get your food, or look at the political scene. And you can see that in both of those spheres of life, a lot of corruption, a lot of lies, a lot of just evil has crept in. So that it's hard for us to get food that's not genetically modified. It's hard for us to get food that's actually healthy. And in the political scene, it's hard to find a political party or organization that is not just sold out to the enemies of our nation and faith and things like that. So to see the same thing in the church really should not be that surprising. And it also means that we shouldn't throw the ecclesiastical baby out with the bathwater. Every institution, from government to business to church to schools to media and more, have been infiltrated and subverted. The church is simply another institution to which that has happened.
Yeah, I agree. Well, in your view, both of you can answer this. What is the proper use of love and tolerance among Christians?
Well, I'd say first and foremost for our families and you know, to be very, I guess to be very loving to our families. I'm sorry, mommy brain.
It's okay. To put them first.
Yes, absolutely.
And you've often talked about it in terms of like a bullseye.
Right. Yeah. So you have different rings in a bullseye, from the very middle to, and then it kind of goes out from there. And the people that we're supposed to be take the most care of and love and really try to influence are in the middle of that bullseye. And then maybe it can go out from there to neighbors or extended family. And then, you know, as you go out further and further, then you get to nations, then you get to, you know, bringing in the refugees and whatever, which would be, if we want to help other countries, then we need to do it in their countries.
Yeah.
You know, maybe send missionaries. They don't need to come here. And we need to give what's left after we have given to our own. That's very important.
Definitely.
Yeah, I've talked a lot about that in terms of just in terms of living your life. It's really important to keep perspective and keep things in their proper order. So like, for example, you know, Mary and I, we cannot solve the problem of the invasions, whether it's from Mexico or from these Muslims or whatever. We can't solve it on our own, but we can do our part. And we do that part first and foremost by being accountable to God and taking care of ourselves and our families. Then, like Mary is saying, we go out from there to our communities, our churches, the people we actually know. Now, from there, we go so far as to reach people we don't even physically, we haven't physically met yet, but with whom we can communicate over the internet and whatnot. And so that's what we're doing in these small groups, the podcast, the website, things like that. But the important thing is, like Mary was saying, is we have to focus on first ourselves and the family, the people for whom we are responsible. And, you know, like if everybody did their job, kind of like, you know, think about the great movie about the Spartans, 300. You know, you got this line, you know, these ranks of Spartans, shoulder to shoulder. And, you know, the funny thing is that they had a spear to kill the enemy and they had a shield, but that shield was not really to protect themselves. That shield was to protect the guy next to them. And if one person in that rank failed to hold his shield properly, the guy next to him would get it. And so if we just all did our jobs and exercised dominion in biblical terms, you know, took dominion like God says in Genesis 1, and did our jobs in our own souls and in our own, you know, workplaces and homes and families, this whole thing would radically change. And so we want to be able to change the world, but it is like the old saying goes, you know, think globally but act locally. And that's a very biblical concept.
Makes perfect sense to me. Well, let's talk about one of the other things that cucks always say, turn the other cheek, right? And so it seems that a lot of them are loving and tolerating even enemies who want to kill them. Have you noticed this?
Oh, absolutely. Well, and they're literally inviting them in, which is nuts.
Yeah, it's more than turning the other cheek at that point. You know,
no,
it's like,
yeah,
turning the other cheek and giving them a free dinner.
And bending over while you're making them dinner.
Yes.
Yeah. The problem is that they honestly, I mean, and we were there, so we are not casting aspersions on their character. I believe that many of these people, if not most of these people, they genuinely want to do what they believe is right.
Yeah.
And so this can be the best kind of person to have on your side, but it can also be, unfortunately, the worst, most intensely committed person on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Plus, I mean, it's very painful and hurtful because these are your own people.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is what we saw, like I said, in the American Civil War. And that's what we're seeing right now in the Western world in general, this conflict between Westerners over how to deal with other people. It's nuts. But like I said, in the States, we've seen this before.
Yeah. I think some people are genuinely just so nice. I think there's a lot of Christians that are just so nice and they mean well, but they're naive. They can't comprehend what kind of evil they're dealing with because maybe they don't have that kind of evil within themselves.
Well, really for a professing Christian to walk around in this world and believe that everything, like in the movie Pollyanna, is going to work out just fine and there's no harm or evil in there, is to actually deny some of the central truths of the faith. I mean, we do believe fundamentally that we are depraved, sinners, fallen, alienated from God, enemies of God. And that's the whole reason why we need Jesus. It's not like Jesus was like just some gold star to make us a little better than we already were. That's not the faith at all. That's progressivism. That's humanism. But that's not Christianity at all. And so I do think that there are some serious doctrinal reasons for why the churches are the way they are. And like I said, it came because they've been subverted through liberalism or whatever the term you want to use, that they actually did change the doctrinal emphases. So, you know, when you look at the SJW-like activities of these major denominations, they're honestly, the reasons they're doing them is because doctrinally they are not far off from the Unitarian Universalists or from the Communist Party USA. So I would say that these people who are culturally shooting at us and aiding and abetting literally our conquerors and invaders, they are dangerously close to leaving the faith altogether. That's not my call to make, but when we get right down to it, that's the problem. But nonetheless, they are still our people. They are our co-ethnics. Mm-hmm. And they are people who do profess the same faith. And so we have to be very patient and pray for them and tolerate a lot, but we don't tolerate a knife to our throats.
That's right.
And so that's when turn the other cheek gives way to the proper context. Jesus also told the apostles the night he was betrayed, go sell your cloak and buy two swords. Okay. Jesus is not a pacifist. Christianity is not a pacifistic faith. So like I said, it comes back to the doctrines that have been undermined, and we need to restore those through a real reformation.
Another big one that comes up in the alt-right, I think we should talk about, is the relationship between Jews and Christianity, the Judeo-Christian link and Jesus as a Jew. So what are your thoughts about it?
Well, I'll speak to that first because I had an Israeli flag on my wall in college. and I specifically, I wish I had a copy of the email, but it was so long ago, it's long gone. I specifically remember emailing the Israeli embassy saying, hey, I'm a white Christian. Can I come help you guys? I don't think I ever heard back, but that's fine. I don't think I would have been quite fit for the IDF. But actually, it's funny. I knew Jewish kids who did go and do their time in the IDF so they can make Aliyah someday.
Yeah, it's free Christian slave labor. It's great. They love it.
Yeah, right? Oh, I'm telling you, if push comes to shove, man, they'd be stupid not to take all these millions of evangelicals and just enlist them. But the crazy thing is that no matter how, and I mean, There's literally millions of evangelicals who would live and die for Israelis. But still the Jews hate those people.
Yes.
More than they even hate Muslims. It's nuts. Mm-hmm. I think there's no explanation for it other than the fact that Judaism at its core is anti-Gentile and specifically anti-Christian. It's anti-Christ. But anyway, like I was saying in my journey, when I got more into the Bible and specifically came across just more traditional Protestant doctrines, and there's this doctrine actually, the eschatology called amillennialism, which says that the kingdom of heaven is now, right? Like we're doing God's work now. It's not like we're waiting for like in the Left Behind series, we're all raptured and then Jesus comes back and the Jews run the world and all this sort of thing. No, you know, historically Christian churches by and large have taught, whether Jew or Gentile, you're part of God's kingdom now. And so the Jews are not the key people. They're not the key players. People who profess Christ, Christians, they're the key players. And so if that's true, and the Bible says it is, and like I said, that is the historic doctrine across the branches of Christianity, then the Jews really play no significant role today, unless they're doing something stupid, in which case they're just another nation doing something stupid. So the people we need to be sticking up for are our families, our co-ethnics, and our fellow Christians. And so that's when the Israeli flag came down.
It's just a shame that so many Christians are totally blind to that. You know, like, the Jews hate you. They're not doing anything for you.
Yeah.
And it's like a one-sided relationship. And it's not working out so well for us.
Yeah. And then so you have the theological reasoning that undermines Christian Zionism. And then when you get to the actual, like, what's actually happening on the ground, when you learn about the USS Liberty, mm-hmm. when you learn about the Jewish role in pornography, in abortion, in feminism, in this gender insanity, and in the third world invasion of the West, and all these other things, you're like, so the Jews are behind everything that conservative Christians hate?
Yeah, how does this work? Exactly.
Yeah,
how are we supporting this?
Why should I be for this?
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's a big red pill we need to spread around.
I ask Christians that all the time when they're complaining about Hollywood and the filth coming out of there. I'm like, you realize it's Jews making that stuff, right? The people mm-hmm. you think are the chosen people, right? The people that actually hate Christians.
Yeah. Like when the minute I see the Weinstein Brothers logo go up at the beginning of a movie, I'm like, oh, I know it's coming.
Prepare yourself.
Yeah. You know?
So how do you tackle the whole Jesus was a Jew thing?
Well, he was. I cast doubts on the idea that modern day Jews are literally descended from, you know, Moses, let's say, or Abraham, more broadly speaking. But the important doctrine is that, yes, Jesus is the son of David. He fulfilled the messianic prophecies. But actually, I did a teaching about this just a few weeks ago. You can find it at gmwhiteamerica.com. From the first chapter of the Gospel of Matthew, which is the genealogy of Christ, which is really just setting up Matthew's argument that Jesus is the son of David, he is Messiah, he is like the Jewish Messiah. And so we want to uphold that because it's obviously, Matthew spends a lot of time on it, wrote a whole book about it, it must be pretty important. But beyond that, what Jesus makes clear in the Gospel, and Matthew again makes this very clear to his Jewish audience, is that, like I said, God's plan of salvation, certainly Jews were a part of it and a critical part of it, but the Jews as a people group also turned away for centuries repeatedly, turned away completely from God's word, perverted it, twisted it. They created what we now call the Talmud, and they killed Jesus Christ. I mean, you know, when I look at Peter and Paul and James and John, these were Jews. But when I look at who put Jesus on the cross, those were Jews too. And Mary and I, we've been reading Acts lately. Mm-hmm. And so we see these Jews who follow Christ saying to their non-believing co-ethnics, you crucified the son of God. And you know, God is going to bring judgment on you. You know, the apostle Paul himself, he was a Pharisee. He was a Jew. He was a Jewish scholar. And he says, God is going to bring the Romans to destroy you. Jesus predicted that the Romans would come and destroy Jerusalem. And so when you see these saints and the Son of God himself saying this about the Jewish nation, that they're not God's special pet anymore, that they can be part of God's kingdom. But again, the focus is on those who follow Messiah, those who follow Christ.
And act in a Christian way, walk the walk, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you can't just have some Jew that's, you know, doing the things that Jews have been doing, like in Hollywood mm-hmm. and the whole pornography thing and et cetera, et cetera, and say that they're going to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Like just because they're special. No, yeah, sorry, yeah. That's not how it works.
Yeah. Salvation is by grace, not by race. Mm-hmm. And so we very much.
Wasn't Jesus calling them Pharisees too? And he was turning the tables, you know, the money changers in the temple. And you know, yeah, really, he came to lay the law for these Jews. They denied it. They killed him. And now look, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So Jews can be saved, but it's not because you're Jewish you're going to be saved. It's you repent of sin, you put your faith in Christ.
And then, live a holy life.
And live a whole life. Right. And then you're saved. Yeah, and that's open to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, many in the alt-right are, we're a diverse bunch. We have, you know, spiritually speaking, there's agnostics, pagans, even atheists, a lot of Christians. And, you know, I think there's less tension nowadays, but there is still a kind of a tense relationship between some pagans and Christians. So how do you respond to that debate?
Well, I mean, obviously, theologically, we are where we are. For us, like, that was actually something we had to work through in terms of culture. Like, look at C.S. Lewis, look at J.R.R. Tolkien, look at Shakespeare, look at Homer, look at the great works of our heritage. Mm-hmm. A lot of them reference pagan mythology. They deal with magic, things of that nature. So how do we as Christians, you know, are we okay with that? Do we say, no, that's off limits? Because, you know, like how do you explain to your kids, okay, guys, I want you to read this book about polytheism, but you're Christians, okay? So that is something you have to work through. But I know for me, honestly, one of the things that really helped me get to where I am is as I was coming out of my conservative years, I just kept seeing over and over and over that every other ethnic group had a proud heritage and they could talk, you know, their language, their literature, their music, their dance, their spirituality, things like that. And I'm like, surely my heritage that I want to pass on to my descendants must be more than you go to this building and you sing a few songs. It must be more than that. And so for me and for Mary, what we've done is we've kind of embraced even some of the more high church elements of Western civilization. So that includes, yes, we like cathedrals. We are stalwart Protestants, but we like cathedrals.
That's right.
We like the stained glass, you know, like,
beautiful pictures on ceilings.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we like all that stuff. But it also means that we're going to embrace, again, without denying our faith, without endorsing the sorts of things that we would see the pagan gods do if they're sinful things. We absolutely teach our kids about Homer, and we've read a children's version of, you know, Homer's great epics to the kids, and it's awesome stuff. And so we embrace the heritage that our forefathers you know, created and passed on to us. As with any good child, we want to honor our fathers and our mothers. And that goes back millennia without, of course, replicating what we see as their mistakes or their sins. So that's how we navigate that tension for ourselves. And then in terms of dealing with our contemporaries, again, we work together where we can, and we, you know, we have a respectful disagreement where we can.
Yeah, and I think we want a lot of the same things. We want a place for our children. I mean, I keep on going back to the family. Mm-hmm. I'm a mom, you know, and I have kids that I want to see succeed. And that's what a lot of other people want too. You know, a lot of whites that are not Christians want the same thing. Mm-hmm. We need to work together in order to have that. At this point, it's you know, we have us. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think too. Our ancestors that were, you know, pre-Christian times were actually radical traditionalists. I think primordial traditionalists, because they needed it in order to survive. The family unit was very important. And then, of course, you know, they weren't monsters. They had the nine noble virtues. They had a lot of ancient knowledge. They were spiritual. They talked about the gods. I mean, they really cared about each other too. I think a lot of these ancient elements and myths and concepts have actually seeped into the Bible. So some of that is still alive in Christianity.
There's definitely a lot of overlap, and you can see that. I've read books, for example, that talk about how some of those pre-Christian, you know, themes in European paganism, they kind of laid the groundwork for it to be easier for our ancestors to accept Christianity. So there's that. Now today, we obviously, like, even just in the last couple of days, we had, you know, this chick on the right, Tomi Lahren, and make some claims about being pro-abortion. And that has inflamed a lot of pro-life conservatives like ourselves. And then I see Richard Spencer write about, no, you know, she's right. We should be pro-abortion, those sorts of things. So we are going to run into those differences, and they're real, and I don't want to minimize them, unnecessarily. But honestly, like I said about perspective, it's like I can't control everything. I'm just going to do what I can do and be responsible with that, you know?
Yeah, I think it's important just to focus on the big things. I mean, we have so much, we have this monumental task in front of us. So yeah, I don't like to bicker and stuff with people in spirituality. I think that's a personal thing, and everyone's entitled to their own spiritual path and the gods that they want to pray to. And I think it's all good, whatever kind of spirituality people want to have. Now, Mary, let's talk about balancing motherhood and thinking about politics. Do you avoid it altogether? Because it is, it's hard being a mother and focusing on this threat we're facing as a people.
Yeah, it can get really black pill and really scary and everything. I've never really been a political person. I'm very thankful that my husband kind of understands all that and can dabble in where he can. But I guess my biggest focus by being at home is really to make sure that they have the understanding that what they are is good. By being white, it's not a sin, you know? Mm. You don't need to be beaten down because of that. And just help them have a healthy sense of self. And also give them the ability to answer the hard questions that they might get on the outside, you know, outside of our home. And that kind of goes into the Walls and Fences book, which I'm sure we'll get to. But a lot of that, the reason that I thought this book was so important to create was because I feel like our children need to have good responses to the cuckservatives that will maybe shake fingers at them and say, how could you, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Or just to be able to have those answers to respond to all the different questions and concerns that other parents may have. So
that's right. You wrote a book called Walls and Fences. So tell us more about what's in it, what inspired it, and maybe you can even read a little bit from it.
Sure. Okay. So Walls and Fences was inspired by the fact that Trump was on the way to winning.
Hooray, praise God.
Yeah, so, and the whole thing that we were really excited about was the idea of him actually building a wall, which, it's just ridiculous. Like, why do we have to go through this? The wall should already be up. This should be understood, but whatever. So, anyway, I wanted my kids to be able to understand that having a wall is good because they're surrounded by a whole bunch of people that are like, oh, I'm not sure if I'm for Trump or not because of this, and we need to be open borders, and aren't you a Christian? Blah, blah, blah. And so, we just kind of, I sat down one day and just started writing about all the different other places that had walls, the reasons for walls, like trying to put it down on paper, just very, very simply, both for my children, but also for other people outside our homes. And that's kind of where it came from.
Yeah, and then I got on the forums, I guess the now defunct TRS forums, and I said, hey, my wife wrote the story. I want to make it into a book. Does anybody out there know how to draw? Because I can't. And then I randomly get this guy, Ford Henry. He says, I can do something, you know, send me a note. And so we started talking, and then a couple months later, bada bing, bada boom, we have this book. It's beautiful.
Yeah, no stick figures.
Yeah, I draw stick people too. Yeah, we know Ford Henry too. He's amazingly talented and a super kind man, very generous, and he did a beautiful job on yours.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we started conversing over email, and then he sent me a sample. I'm like, whoa.
Jackpot.
Yeah. Oh, man. Glad somebody has those skills.
I think that this kid's book is probably one that lefties would love to burn, because they would love to burn our books.
Yeah, it's really great. It has this one page where it actually shows the wall in Israel, and so it kind of exposes them.
Yeah. Like, we talk about the wall in Israel. We talk about the Great Wall of China. And we explicitly state all nations have a right to protect themselves. But then at the end, we show these... Ford Henry did a great job of depicting the radical difference between SJWs and a normal white family.
Yeah.
and, So yeah, I agree. I think they would love to hate it. So yeah, we'll have to, you know, sprinkle that around, you know,
publicize it more.
That's right.
Poke at the bee's nest a little bit.
Yeah.
So now, are you homeschooling? Do you know of homeschool networks? How are you socializing your kids with other like-minded kids? How are you basically raising them so that they don't go Marxist?
Yeah, we are homeschooling. We don't have a lot of people that they are hanging out with in the church, just because we feel like we have to be really careful with them not being
indoctrinated wrong.
Yeah, exactly, with the whole conservative thing.
But at least we put them in, you know, youth group stuff. We have them in sports. They and like many homeschoolers, like, they're far better behaved. Than a lot of kids who've been public schools. And I came up through the public school system. I was a government indoctrinated brat. And I feel I missed out on so much because they do skew it so much to the left. And then obviously we're taking preventive measures by, very intentionally, but not like too rigidly, catechizing the kids on their faith and through things like walls and fences, and just through normal everyday conversations like, Mom, Dad, why is this Trump guy up there? Why should there be a wall? You know, what does it mean to be white? Those sorts of things. We teach them. So we're red pilling them. We put little red sprinkles in their food,
red
basically.
It sticks with you, you know, because I mean, I went through my rebellious years rebelling against things my parents said, but my dad planted a lot of seeds. He was very good talking about politics and a lot of these kinds of concepts, you know, way back when. I mean, he gave me my first David Duke book. And you know, kids always rebel against their parents, but I came back around. A lot of things he said really stuck with me. So do you worry about your kids rebelling from some of the things that you're teaching them?
At this point, not really. I think that we're really teaching them truth, and then they can go out into the world and see that it's the truth. Now, I mean, I had my little bit of rebelling too. I grew up in a Christian home. And so I understand that that's probably going to happen here and there. But I feel like since we're not hiding anything from them, we're not just like, you know, telling them only one side of the story. We're also telling them the other side of what people say and why they're incorrect. I think it's allowing them to think about those things beforehand and feel kind of like, oh, they can have this independence beforehand. I can consider this. I can ask Mom and Dad these questions, and I'm not going to be browbeaten because I'm asking them these questions.
Yeah, I really want the kids, because they're still pretty young at this point, so we have to be careful. We don't want to overload them. There's only so much you can handle emotionally at their ages right now. But certainly as they get into their mid to later teens, you got to step back. You got to let them go out there on their own and be battle tested. And so for me and Mary, we want to train them up and make them, you know, equip them with the right weapons and the right armor, so to speak, so that they can go into the workplace or a school setting or something like that and be able to know how to get along, know how to follow rules, know how to be innovative and successful, and also how to defend themselves, both physically and spiritually and intellectually.
And I think that's actually very important, especially for our sons, because right now it's like everything is beating down male people and just men are just being beaten down quite a bit. And to give them the ability to be strong and to be confident when they go out into the world, I think that's one of the best tools that we can give them. And then the support when they come back home.
Yeah, I think John Taylor Gatto, I don't know if you know him, but he has a lot of good work. He talks about teaching kids critical thinking, you know. You arm them so that they know how to dissect some of these arguments and think for themselves as opposed to indoctrinating them. I think that will go really far. Teaching them how to critically think so they can see through the propaganda, and that will go really far in their life.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've actually, in the last couple of weeks, we actually had that conversation with our eldest, just explaining to her the concept of agendas in movies and TV shows.
And books, actually.
And books, as well. Yeah,
she was reading a book about, what was it? A girl that was kidnapped by Indians.
And they make it out to be a good thing.
Yeah, it was like a Caldecott medal or something like that.
Jeez.
Ridiculous. And so she was reading it and she came to me and was talking to me about it. And I was kind of probing, asking questions. And the book had presented it in a way that, oh, the Indians were good, even though they kidnapped her
and scalped her and raped her. They're still good.
Yeah. And killed her family. They were good because they took care of her and they treated her nicely once she was, you know, kidnapped. And we had to kind of sit down and explain to her that that's actually not normal and not good.
Jeez.
Yeah. Now I have to point this out. She was at the library with her grandparents.
Right.
We screen everything that they get their hands on, but that was one of the ones that slipped through the net. So we had to like, oh, dude, we got to undo this.
But at the same time,
but it was a teachable moment.
Teachable moment. And I'm so glad that we had that opportunity to kind of set her back on the track, but also that she learned through that conversation, oh, they're trying to educate me in this other way to make me think it's okay. And also to tell her, no, it is not okay that, you know, people are kidnapped and murdered and ridiculous.
Well, speaking of looking at movies and analyzing them, you can make it kind of fun for them. You can tell them there's secret messages and there's symbols in there. You know, we're going to solve this mystery. What is this movie really telling us? I think that that would be really fun for them. And then it will stick with them forever. They'll always think about, what is the secret message in this movie, right?
Yeah, we'll make a Mystery Science 3000 trolls. You know, the little old writers like laughing at this, that, and the other leftist agenda in whatever they watch. And like, ha ha.
That would be hilarious.
That's stupid. Let's go do something else. This is getting boring.
Right. Yeah, I know there's a lot of alt-right networks forming, which is really good. Cascadia, I just spoke with them. There's a lot of other groups around the country, which is good because a lot of them have families and they have kids, so they can celebrate traditions together. They can grow up with other kids that think the same. I think that that's kind of fun. So, do you guys have any kind of network where you are?
Well, geographically, no, but that's almost by intent at this point in our work. So we don't have that geographic network, but we're working to build up that network just kind of everywhere through our small group Bible studies. So basically, you know, we reached out to the pool of people who listen to Good Morning White America, our podcast, and we're saying, hey, let's just start getting together on Sunday afternoons and reading the Bible together and praying and hanging out. And it's been really cool. We last week, like, for example, in one of the meetings, and we got five different groups going right now, led by myself or Clement Pulaski or Hans Gigak. So we got a bunch of people leading. But like we had a guy who's calling in from China, a guy from down under, we got a guy in California, we got a guy in another part of the country. So it's pretty cool. And so our hope is that as those numbers grow, we will be able to say, okay, you guys are in like the Dallas area, you know, hey, you know, you guys can start meeting together. And our desire long-term, and I don't know how far off that long-term is, but our desire is to actually start having congregations so that if you are a pro-white Christian, you've got a spiritual home. You've got a place where you can get fed and a place where you can have those potlucks and have those maybe Christian schools or Christian homeschooler get-togethers, that sort of thing. So that's what we're doing to try to build that up.
That's great. I love that idea. Yeah, tell us about your radio show, Good Morning White America. It airs on Tuesday mornings, correct?
Yeah. It was just the brainchild I had in the shower one day about 14 months ago. It's like, you know, it's early. I got to go to work. I want to hear something that encourages me. Mm-hmm. Hey, honey, I got this idea.
Yeah, I was definitely a little concerned. I was like, no, oh, I don't know what to say on a show like this. You're the one that reads all that stuff, you know.
Right.
But we kind of decided that we wanted to create something that we wish we had when we were first kind of getting into the red pill stuff and everything, and something not just depressing, but something that normalizes what you believe and encouraging.
Yeah, we try to be very, very positive, like not like, no, I guess we can be pretty giddy. No, that's true. That's true. But positive. And so like Dr. Carl Rattle, he'll do pieces on great things in European and American history. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah.
The Hate Bird, he's reading great poetry. Mm-hmm. We got Hans Dana Gigax. They're talking about like how to grow your own crops and how to do home birthing and things like that. We've had more people as well.
The just Christmas episodes were fantastic.
The, yeah. The Advent Across Europe, you know, John Rockwell did this amazing series just highlighting how each of these European and then American cultures celebrates Advent and Christmas. And so we try to make it something that's definitely like your white pill for the week.
Right.
without shying away from some of these hard topics. Like a couple weeks ago, we were talking about how Tim Tebow, who's a prominent Christian evangelical athlete, how he was, all these articles are being written about him because he said, I want to adopt kids from all over the world. who's making this multiculturalism really like a Christian sort of idolatry sort of a thing. And so we had to say, look, you know, we respect and admire a lot of what this guy has done, and we love him as a brother, and we pray for him, but he's wrong here. And so we're going to break that down and explain why that's so. So we tackle some of those hard things. But again, we try to keep it in perspective, try to keep it pro-white, pro-Christian, and positive.
Right. And one thing that we like to say is we like to focus on the greater yes. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's a lot of really bad, sad, scary information out there.
And it's true.
And it's we're not saying that that's incorrect. But the greater yes means that we're going to focus, at least for a little bit of time, we're going to focus on the good that our people have done and focus on the happy things and that type of stuff.
Yeah. And like instead of orienting our lives around what we are against, we want to orient our lives on what we are for.
That's right.
We want to be, obviously we are in a fight. Absolutely. But we want to build something and defend what we have and build on that. So
you have to remind people what they're fighting for. Remind them what their culture is. Exactly. You have to be positive. You can't be defeatist. You can't be Debbie Downer. It turns people off. And I also like that you're offering a lot of diversity in the true sense, you know, because the white mind is complex. And even in the alt-right movement, we have, you know, all kinds of people who think all kinds of different things. And that's been a blessing and a curse for white people. But I think that that's why it's good we have a lot of these different shows and different outlets. But then we all come together also as a unit when we need to and have a bigger impact together. I think it's good that we're all in touch with each other.
Yeah, it's definitely something to build on.
Yeah, it's been great because we've gotten to know other people that are kind of in our same, have our same ideas, and we wouldn't have gotten to know them without stepping out and doing a podcast. Mm-hmm. So
cool. Thank you, guys. Why don't you give out the website and any other closing thoughts that you have before we end for this time?
Well, before we start to wrap up, actually, can I go ahead and read a page or two? Can Mary and I read a couple pages from our book?
Yeah.
Because it is this great little book, and again, it's called Walls and Fences. You can find it at Amazon, but you can also link to it at gmwhiteamerica.com. We'll go ahead and just read some of the final pages. And again, Ford Henry did a fantastic job. I'm looking at a beautiful picture of a pastoral scene with a castle and a shepherd and a wall.
Little fluffy sheep.
Yeah, awesome stuff. So this page reads, walls were used to protect towns and people. Fences help farmers protect their crops and help shepherds protect their sheep.
Do you have a wall in your country?
Many people have fences to protect their property and to make it safe to play outside.
Do you have a fence in your house?
And then the last page, and this is the great page, this is the great dichotomy between the SJWs and the normal white family. So we've got some SJWs picketing in front of the White House, and then a nice white family sitting inside their home on the next page. Some people think fences are wrong. They think walls and fences hurt people's feelings, but it is more important for us to be safe and protected.
We should always be kind to others, but if we do not take care of our families, we are sinning. God loves it when we obey him and take care of each other.
So, like I said, that's called Walls and Fences. You can find that at gmwhiteamerica.com, and you can also just search for it at Amazon. You can look up Walls and Fences, written by Mary Gray, illustrated by Ford Henry. You can, if you want to listen to the podcast, it comes out, like you said, Lana, every Tuesday morning by 7 a.m. Eastern. And it's on SoundCloud. But again, just go to gmwhiteamerica.com. You'll find the podcasts. You'll find Walls and Fences. You'll find our Bible study guides. You'll find some Bible teachings there as well to listen to, as some spiritual nourishment, and lots of other things. And of course, we're always inviting and encouraging people to get involved in these small group Bible studies.
Love it. Well, thank you both. Keep up the great work. It's been great getting to know you both.
Thank you. It was nice to be here.
Look, I know both sides of this argument. I know what the pagans are saying about Christians, and I know what the Christians are saying about pagans. But considering the times we're in, it's best to avoid arguing with anyone on our side about their spirituality or lack of. Yes, it's healthy to discuss, challenge, and disagree, but alt-right fights and divisions when it comes to the esoteric is futile at this point in time. Find a happy middle. This show is supported by listeners, so please support me. The best way is to sign up for a Red Ice membership to access all our content. Go to redicemembers.com or send a donation to paypal.me/redice. I have many more terrific guests lined up, so check redice.tv or redicemembers.com for the latest. Have a great week.